Listen to Shoot the Defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence on FNX Radio Football and StadiumScene.tv. I'm your host, Del, and we have loads and loads of co-hosts tonight. In fact, I've lost count, but then again, I can only count to five these days. So let's start with the usual suspects, shall we? And Mr. Rodri Giggs, how are you doing, Rod? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Quiet week, and it's quiet in the city as well. I thought it would be busy tonight in the city, but, you know, city having the parade, so it's not that busy.
Now. I've seen the clips, but I'm not going to say anything. I was going to say, you deserve a quiet week given your trip to Ibiza. How did that go?
Yeah, it was all right. It was X-rated. It was okay. It was all right.
Did you go to space?
No, we went to Pikes, we went to Mambo's, we went to Amnesia, but no space.
Oh, okay. And is it still €50 to get in?
I'm not too sure.
Well, I must have got mugged then when I was out there. Fucking hell. Yeah, best time of my life though, to be fair. But anyway, let's move on. Guest number two, the returning Phil Melville, the Man City fan. Congratulations, Phil, before anyone else starts booing you with no names mentioned.
Nah, that's no problem. We got used to that now.
Great to have you back, mate. How you been?
I've been good. I think it's been 12 months since I last spoke to you, even a little bit longer. So, been busy. It's good to be back.
Great to have you back, mate. And again, congratulations. I say that with gritted teeth, but yeah, you guys deserve it. Right, who's the next one? Who shall I pick now? Oh, I want to go with Connor. How you doing, Connor? Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I'm all good. Saying to you before recording, glad the season's over now. A bit of rest.
And your skin represents the Southampton kit at the moment, doesn't it? Red and white.
Yeah. I don't have that massive, ugly black blob on the top of my head, though. It's disgusting. Hate the kit so much. Hate it.
Oh, don't worry. Well, listen, at least, you know, the kit will be there for a year. Your sunburn will go within a few weeks. Everything will be all right. Don't worry.
Yeah. Silver lines and all that.
Absolutely. Right. Next co-host, none other than Mr. Coach Kojo. Hello, my friend. Back again.
Hey, I'm good, mate.
Yeah, it's been a while. 7 days, like Craig David.
Yeah, you know, that's a long time, man.
So but we're not going to talk about Saturday and Sunday because we know what happened, and me and you, we're not that close.
I mean, we can talk about this Saturday and Sunday. I've had a wonderful weekend. I ain't stressed about night, so, you know, I'm feeling good. No Ander Herrera in my life anymore as well. So, yeah. I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling wonderful.
Good. I like the positivity. Excellent. Brilliant. And my final co-host, he's decided to join us. It's been a while. I've been trying to get him on for a long time. He's always got an excuse, whether it be being a dad, because who wants to be one of those these days? Harry Simeon from Chronicles of Aguna. Welcome back, my friend.
How's it going, guys? Pleasure to be back. It has been a while. I do apologise.
No, don't be silly.
I don't really want to talk about Arsenal much these days. It feels like, you know, it's all riding on one game now. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Welcome to the club, my friend. We had that a couple of years ago with United. So now you're going to have to feel our pain.
At least you didn't have to go to Baku for it, for God's sakes.
Well, you can talk about that if you want, mate. It's up to you. I don't mind. We're good listeners here, as you know.
I find it therapeutic, I'll be honest.
Ranting about Arsenal, great, yeah. We all do that about our teams, don't we? You know what? Not Phil, because his team always keeps on winning. So, yeah, the rest of us, we're just, yeah. Anyway, the less said about that, the better. But welcome back, mate. How's fatherhood going for you anyway?
Yeah, it's going well. It's going well. The problem is every time you think you've found a routine that works best, it goes up in smoke really soon. And struggled today. Had a mad weekend and I've struggled to keep patient. So palmed him off to the missus to join you guys. So I'm looking forward to chilling out for an hour.
Sorry to say this, mate, but it doesn't get easier as I get older.
Don't say that to me, man.
It really doesn't. Next thing you know, they're 5 years old and they're calling you an idiot. Yes, and mine has done that. I blame her mum, the bitch. But anyway, won't go into that. Won't go into that. Right, we will kick off our show with the FA Cup final, where Man City became the first English club to do a domestic treble after pumping Watford 6-0. That's the only word I can use. Raheem Sterling capped off an excellent season with a brace, adding to two from Gabriel Jesus, David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. Now, Rod, Roberto Pereira missed a great chance to give Watford the lead, although given City's form, mate, I think there only would have been one winner even if he did score.
I think if they would have scored, they would have probably been stunned for 5 or 10 minutes, but the mood the City were in, it still would have been the same outcome, because they were definitely in the mood on Saturday, and how many Watford scored, I'm sure City would have scored more.
When did you ever see such a one-sided cup final? Probably what, when Arsenal beat Aston Villa and possibly when United batted Chelsea? That was even worse, wasn't it, the other day?
Yeah, or Wigan beating City. No, but Chelsea, when we beat Chelsea 4-0, that was probably the most one-sided cup final, probably. Well, yeah, 4-0. That's one I can remember anyway. It's probably one been before that. But yeah, they were just they were totally dominant. And like I said, whatever Watford would have scored, City would have scored more.
Absolutely. And Kojo, I had Watford down as dark horses when they reached the quarterfinal stage, mate. But they really didn't stand a chance against City, did they?
It was an exhibition match. It was training. It was an absolute joke of a game because, it's a final and you don't get hit for six in a final. I'm sorry, it's supposed to be the one game where anything can happen. And, the favourites can win it, but to get hit for six, man. And, Ben Foster tweeted something about, it didn't go the way we planned, but it's a fantastic experience. Like, man, shut up. You got hit 6-0. It was quite an embarrassing performance for Watford. That being said, City were superb in all departments, and they do this thing where after that one counter, Watford couldn't really hit them on a counter again. It's almost like Kompany and Laporte just know how to lock you down, so that if you think about going for a counter, it's like, no, we're still here, let's try and get past us two first. And yeah, the way they played the game was excellent, so they just fully deserved it. They had no chance of Watford.
You called it an exhibition match. It kind of reminds me of like Man City versus Bangkok All-Star 11. That kind of...
Yeah, it looked like... I was going to say it looked like my school team back in the day game. We hit for 6 goals. I'd rather not go back then.
Did you pick up your ball and go home?
I literally walked off the pitch and left the ball behind.
Christ. Phil, you've seen City at their lowest point and now at their highest. Can you describe this journey as a City fan? Because I remember the days when you guys had Uwe Rosler and, Michael Frontzek and all these other players, but now you're kind of dominating.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back in sort of like over the last sort of 20 years, there's always been sort of like one club, Arsenal, United, dominated. If I think back on City's time at them during that period, certainly go back to 20 years ago, 99, we're playing in the third tier of the English Football League and playing Gillingham at Wembley. You think, cast your mind back to that sort of period when, the late equaliser from Dickhoff and how things have changed in sort of like what you would call a short period of time. So, there's a lot. I remember back to the not so good times, and I think that's why a lot of City fans still sort of have this sort of reservation of typical City, I think, is the expression they tend to use. But, these times are the times you enjoy most, aren't they? So, it's good while it lasts.
Oh, absolutely. But obviously people are going to point to, Sheikh Mansour's money and all that kind of stuff. But what do you think the turning point was for City's history, like the modern day history? Would you say it's Dickhoff's goal or something else happened in between or even before that?
Obviously, people will point back to the Dickhoff goal in that Gillingham game, but I don't necessarily think that was a turning point in City's history because, I think the Abu Dhabi group were nowhere near on the scene. I think the sort of like the catalyst really was, you know, the money being pumped in. I think it was the time they sort of, I think they went out and made a big deal about him signing Tevez at the time when he'd been playing down the road. And I think that was probably the first sort of statement they made that, you know, we're serious and, you know, we're going to try and have a good go for it. And that's for me, is where things started to sort of really take off for them. Especially, I think that's, if it weren't that season, it was the season after that they ended up winning the FA Cup. So, you know, I'd say the FA Cup win against Stoke was probably the catalyst where they got that taste of one trophy and then they probably wanted a bit more.
So which of all the signings City have made over the years do you think has been the most important? Because a lot of people point to a company, which we'll talk about later. But yeah. I think Yaya Toure is up there as well. Can you pinpoint a specific individual that you say, yeah, he's the one that kind of was like the Cantona of City's era, so to speak?
Yeah, I think you've just said it, Stel, to be honest. I think, yeah, Toure, when you think back now, to where they got him from. I know people will probably mention David Silva, but I think Toure, you know, there was nobody really in the Premier League at the time who was playing like he was, you know, getting forward and scoring goals from the midfield. So I think he was definitely the sort of catalyst that took the club onto that sort of next level and sort of dragged them along with him.
Well, Connor, are City officially the most dominant team in English football today? Obviously, they've done a domestic treble. They won the league last season, the back-to-back champions. Would you say they are now the team to beat, even though they're not in the Champions League final?
I'd say they're the team to beat. I think dominant is probably quite a strong word to use.
What do they have to do to be the dominant team then?
I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Because you can always look back at that Man United team who won three in a row and go, that was dominance. And I think winning two in a row is... But it hasn't been done in 10 years, is it? Something like that?
That's right.
So, I don't know. I'm just very reluctant to use big words like dominant because I get very frustrated with superlatives in football these days. But no doubt about it, they are the best, the most functional team in England at the moment. Whether the best, because you argue that Liverpool play slightly better football to watch for most of the season. Depends what you want from football, really, isn't it? I'm sure Phil would say he wants to win trophies, but as a neutral, could care which one of them two wins the trophies. I just want to watch a good game of football. But yeah, I just looked at their women's team as well. I mean, even their women's team's winning cup doubles this year, so they seem to be doing pretty well all across the board. I think Champions League's the big one for them, though, isn't it? So, fingers crossed, Guardiola gets his big bit of silverware next season.
Fingers crossed for who?
For Pep. I couldn't have, as long as it's not Liverpool in a third Champions League final in a row, bloody hell. Imagine that.
One at the end of it.
They'd be claiming it as a treble.
Oh, Christ, don't start. Give them a trophy for second place, 97 points. Yeah, great stuff. Harry, Guardiola was incensed by a question posed to him by a journalist about receiving extra payments from the club's Abu Dhabi owners. Now, what are your opinions on the matter? Should the journalist ask this question right after the cup final?
I've got mixed feelings on this one, to be honest, because I think as a journalist, you've got to ask those questions, considering the investigation that's going on in the background and all the discussion about it. So I think he had to ask the question. If he didn't ask the question, he probably wouldn't have been doing his job thoroughly. You could question the timing of it. Maybe, you know, it wasn't really the time or place. But I'm kind of in the middle on this. I'm kind of on the fence on it because on the one hand, I see why he did it. And on the other hand, I can see why Pep's pissed off about it. You know, he wants to celebrate the treble and then you've got a journalist. Sort of, it's one of those issues, isn't it, that's kind of hanging over Manchester City. And a lot of neutrals sit there and they discredit what Manchester City have done because of the fact that they've spent so much money, which I think is slightly unfair because I think it's just the way football is now. And, you know, if you cast your mind back to, you know, the 2000s, for example, where Manchester United was signing Rio Ferdinand one summer for 30 million and then Wayne Rooney for 30 million, and that was big spending. It's just the way the game's moved forward. Now clubs are able to spend, you know, 100 million in a single transfer window. It's just the way football's gone. And I think they play football in such a brilliant, fantastic way, so enjoyable to watch. And, you know, I won't take anything away from Pep Guardiola and his team for their achievements, because they are the best team in the country, arguably the best team in Europe at the moment. We know the best team in Europe doesn't always win the Champions League. And, you know, if Liverpool or Spurs win it, they won't be the best teams in Europe winning it, will they? So, it's, you know, for me, I think it's one of those things where he's got to ask the question, no issue with it whatsoever, but I can understand why Pep probably got a little bit wound up by it as well.
Mm. It's interesting how he says that, Phil, because I remember, you know, when Arsenal were winning league titles, we had people saying, oh, it's because David Dean has got something to do with the FA. And then when United were winning the title, it was like, oh, they spent so much money and they've got the referees on their side. Every time there's a big team or a team that wins trophies and is very successful, people always like to point to excuses. So whenever you hear this stuff about Abu Dhabi and their human rights, as a City fan, does it really bother you? Because let's be honest, I'll be straight with you. As a United fan, if the Saudis take over United, it's going to be the same thing. Their human rights. But for me, it doesn't matter. It's all about winning. Isn't that all the be all and end all of it? Does it matter about the background of these owners?
I think Harry just touched on really is, you know every club sort of like, oh, look back in history, all the big clubs, the ones who've been always been sort of like winning trophies at given stages, have always been the ones who've had the most money to spend and have laid that money out, you know, and City are no different. It's just, again, it's just touching a point that was raised earlier, is it's just a case that there's more money in the game now, there's more money coming from TV revenue right the way, which feeds right through the Premier League. So, you know, to be honest, it's, yeah, again, touching what you've said, Stel, it's basically where that money comes from. I think any club sort of in the Premier League, if they have the opportunity to have that sort of money pumped into them to probably go and compete with the higher echelons of the league, then I think most people would be jumping at the chance. So, you know, and City won't be the first and certainly won't be the last club that has a load of money pumped into them. So, you know, it's just the way football is at this moment in time.
Mm, fair point. Connor, what were you guys saying when Portsmouth were winning the FA Cup?
Yeah, they bought it. And it proved to be the case, didn't it? Let's be perfectly honest. They're paying that price now. That's one thing important. On Portsmouth quick. When we won the Johnson's Paint Trophy, and they were all like, oh, it doesn't even count. We won the last major trophy.
Now, sorry, Connor, what's that?
The Johnson's Paint Trophy.
Yeah, what is that?
It's like the Football League.
I'm taking a piece.
It's the greatest cup available in English football.
Isn't that the one that Sunderland fans are saying should be an entry into Europe if they want it or something?
Yeah, yeah. It's brought about my favourite chant in football. Whenever teams come down, we sing, you'll never win that, you'll never win that. Johnson's Paint Trophy, you'll never win that. And singing that to like Man United fans and Arsenal fans is just amazing.
Fair enough. Well, look, let's move on to Vincent Kompany, and he's announced he'll be taking over the reins at Anderlecht as a player coach. The Belgian leaves Manchester having won 4 titles, 4 League Cups, 2 FA Cups, and he joins City from Hamburg in 2008. Now, Kojo, I think it's quite funny how a couple of weeks ago we were actually talking about Kompany's future and how City should hold on to him a bit longer, and now he's actually left. What do we know?
I think they time for him to move on, but maybe I think him taking the player manager role means that he's obviously waiting to do a bit more in terms of coaching. Maybe they weren't ready to give him something along those lines there, especially if he wants to be a manager, because you're not displacing Pep. So it looks like it makes sense, but he's a legend either way. He's going to get a stand or a statue. He has to, for what he's achieved with the club, for what he's done, for being a leader, a world-class defender, one of the greatest in Premier League history. Like, he deserves all of it. So, I would have said I would have kept him because, you know, in terms of experienced players, obviously we say for a lot of our clubs it's time for them to go, but he's still one that performs at a very high level. But they're ready to move on to the next stage and he's not part of that. But that's how Pep is, you know, he doesn't stay still. He always keeps moving, getting ready to build for the next stage, next team. I think this will be the first time he's doing that at a club, really. But that's how you get success. So, yeah, he's a legend, man. So it's not a bad loss, really. Mm.
Well, if they build a statue, let's just hope they don't exaggerate his head, because it's already the size of Stockport. So
that head shape is phenomenal. You remember My Wife and Kids, that TV show, the kid, Junior. Yeah.
I think you've just given me an idea for the name of the show. Right. Christ. Phil, did you see this coming, and where does Company rank in the list of all-time great City players?
I mean, I would say I didn't see it coming the way it sort of happened. You know, you've got to probably, to be honest, really, you look at the way the club and Company have sort of kept it quiet, because, you know, they didn't win the FA Cup on Saturday, and then Sunday he's got the job at Anderlecht all of a sudden. You know, he's certainly, he's probably been in the pipeline for a while. If you read between the lines, certainly touching on something Kodo said there, is that you've got, you know, Guardiola's going to wants to move the club on, and I think, you know, he's probably had an open and honest conversation with Company and told him that, you know, look, you know, your chances of playing are going to be limited again next season. So I think he'd probably made a decision, you know, mutually, that, you know, it was probably the time for him to move on. Touching on the point of, you know, will he go down as one of the all-time greats? I definitely think so. You know, I think when we look back in history, he'll be probably one of the most decorated captains that played for the club. You know, there was probably a period over two or three seasons when he was, you know, arguably the best centre-back in the world. But certainly one, if not one, the best in the Premier League anyway. So the only one negative point anyone could probably raise about him is that they reported, didn't they, he's probably had 30 plus injuries during his sort of like 11 years at the club. So, you know, that's probably the only negative thing you could probably say about him. But on and off the pitch, you know, the man's been colossal for the club, really.
That's right. I was more surprised as to the timing. As you said, it was straight after the actual FA Cup final. But we were saying a couple of weeks ago that perhaps, you know, his presence in and around the squad would be vital for the younger players, because, you know, he's not 35, 36, he's 32. So he's relatively young for a central defender.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, I think that's one thing that a lot of the City fans are saying at the moment is that he'll be, I think he'll be sorely missed sort of off the pitch, not just on it. And, you know, you're right in saying he is only 32. I mean, probably this season more so, you've probably just noticed a bit more that he's lost a little bit more of his pace, and where he was getting himself out of trouble probably even last season, really. This season he seems to be picking up, like, you know, yellow cards, and seems to be going through people a lot more. So, but yeah, certainly off the pitch, I think he'll be a massive loss and a massive hole to fill, really.
Mm. Rod, use your memory banks here. The last successful player coach I can remember is Luka Viali at Chelsea, who won the Cup Winners' Cup and the League Cup. Before that was Dog Leash, who won two league titles in the FA Cup at Liverpool. How well do you think Company will do?
Well, it depends, really. It depends on a number of things. He's obviously got to get the right staff in that he can trust, that if he does play, then he can trust that the people on the sidelines are going to be given the right information and making the right decisions. And, you know, does he want to carry on playing, or is he more serious now about going into player management? You know, I've done it. When I took over Salford, I was playing myself, and Phil ended up coming in being my assistant. And even though he would tell me to play, I didn't really want to play anymore, so... yeah, it's a difficult one, but you'd think if he's clear of injuries and if he's fit, then, you know, he's still a top class centre-half, so you'd think he'd play, and it wouldn't be as strenuous and as quick pace as the Premier League. So yeah, he's got to get the right people in and have people he can trust, and he obviously, the way he was talking and the way he was going across on interviews, that he does want to carry on playing. So yeah, and why not? Because, you know, he was brilliant at the end of the season, especially with that goal, if, you know, really kicked him on, and then they just went on from strength to strength after that game.
Yeah. Well, look, if he's on the pitch, I don't think you'll get a situation like Kepa in the League Cup final, would you?
Definitely not. No, I think he'd drag him off himself.
Best way to do it, innit? Right, we now turn our attention to the Championship playoffs, where Villa and Derby meet in the final after passing the second leg drama heart rate exam. Harry, Dean Smith's Villa booked their place in the final with a victory over their rivals West Brom on penalties, but it wasn't the most entertaining 120 minutes, but Villa held their nerve when it mattered.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're in the final, and that's what matters. And, you know, you'd like to see the bigger clubs come back into the Premier League. I would anyway. It it's all worked out so far. Fingers crossed they can come up. And I've got nothing against Derby. I just think that Aston Villa are a huge football club and need to be in the Premier League. And I welcome those kind of clubs coming up. And Dean Smith's done a really good job, hasn't he? Because I don't think he was... I think Thierry Henry was touted with the job, wasn't he? And it looks as though the decision's proved to be the right one.
And Connor, Leeds fans, they sang Stop Crying Frank Lampard at Pride Park when they beat Derby 1-0 in the first leg. Now, Frank Lampard sang Stop Crying Frank Lampard in the away dressing room at Elland Road after his team beat Leeds 4-2. That was a game and a half, wasn't it?
It was, and I think we've all seen on Facebook, Frank Lampard enjoyed himself that evening, didn't he, at the... at the bar. His bar tab was like $3,000, something like that. Fair play to him. That is an advert for Championship playoffs, isn't it? If you've ever seen one. That substitution, Dwayne Holmes, was it, came off 40 minutes. Jack Marriott on, changed the game, absolutely changed the game. I mean, I don't know if it was a knock or just a tactical thing. Maybe a tactical thing, since Lampard had too much credit.
The keeper helped them out, though, with that goal, didn't he?
I blame the defender. What are you doing? You see the keeper coming out. Don't tackle him. It's at Liam Cooper, isn't it? Mm. But, as good as Derby were, Leeds... Leeds helped them a lot, didn't they, in just totally capitulating. Everyone said it was going to happen, that Bielsa teams run out of steam at the end of the season. They lasted a little bit longer than most anticipated, but ultimately... it did deserve to go through the day purely based on that 90 minutes alone, really.
Well, gents, who do you think will get that golden ticket back into the Prem? Which of the two teams? Connor, go back to you. Tell me what you think.
I think Villa are the better team and have the better squad. And as Harry said, you want teams like Villa in the Premier League. But I can't help but feel the romance of Frank Lampard taking Derby up. The thing I do fear is if Derby go up, I think they're going to struggle with the amount of loan players they've got, because they seem to be their best players. But we'll see. It's flip of a coin, isn't it, Championship?
Fair enough. Kojo, who's your tip?
I'm going with Derby. I think on a tactical level, I think Lampard's better. But if Villa are going to pull anything off, Jack Grealish is going to have to be... on top form. It's not that they haven't got players around him that can also perform, but when he's ticking, he's the best player in that league. So for me anyway. So I'm going for Derby. I think the way they pulled it back against Leeds tactically was impressive. The way he switched it to up front and immediately just started pressing on that high line was so good to watch. So I'm gonna go with Derby.
Okay. Phil, who's your money on?
I'm going to say Derby. I just think they've got more legs in the midfield. I think it's Mason Mount and is it Wilson, the kid from Liverpool, they've got on loan. I think them two very, very good young players. I just think Lampard's just, you know, he's, as a player, he won a lot. Achieved a lot, and I just think, you know, he's sort of taking that and transferring that into management. So I've just got a sneaky feeling they'll get over the line.
Okay. And Rod, Phil mentioned Wilson. He's a Welshman, isn't he?
Yeah, I agree with Kojo, and I do agree with what Harry said. I do think Villa are a massive club, and we need clubs like that in the Premier League. But you know, I've always liked Frank Lampard, because the way he carried himself, the way he carried himself, and with the Welsh boys, with Wilson and Lawrence, who are both Welsh, I'd definitely go with Derby. But you know, Dean Smith's done a great job, and it's going to be a great game. But we'll just have to wait and see. But if I was going to tip anyone, I would just tip Derby. But if Grealish is on his game, you know, he's like the lad said, he's definitely the best player by far in that league.
Mm. Harry, it's Villa's second playoff final in a row. Can they break that jinx?
Yeah, I think they can. I think the squad's changed quite a bit in that year. And obviously different manager and stuff. And The thing is with like the whole Frank Lampard thing and people talking about like they want Frank Lampard to do well. I get that. You want to see a young British manager doing well in the game. But for me, I think it would kind of be a little bit of a takedown back to earth for Frank Lampard because, you know, people are always talking about him for the big jobs. And in my opinion, he's not done enough yet. He hasn't earned his stripes in management to be able to say that, you know, he's ready to move to a big club. So I think Villa can break the jinx. Absolutely. I think they are the better team. I think pretty much all of us agreed on that. In terms of tactics and on the day, you know, we talk about tactics, we talk about the build up to games, but there's so many factors in football. All it takes is one red card or a bad refereeing call or a lucky ricochet and the game can go one way or the other. So I think, you know, on the day, it's just about who turns up. But I think if I had to put my money on someone, I'd go with Villa at this moment in time. And I think they can break the jinx and we'll see them back in the Premier League next season.
Harry's gone against the grain. I love it.
Always, you know me.
Standard. Right. You guys mentioned Frank Lampard. His old club, Chelsea, were in the news at the weekend as a panel on the Sunday supplement. They probably didn't have anything else to discuss. They spoke about the possibility of Emma Hayes, who happens to be Chelsea's women's team manager, becoming manager of the men's team. Now, I want to know your views on this. Personally, I think it's just a media outlet continuing its women in football campaign. However, at the same time, and I'm just going to say, I think it's a stupid idea. Am I wrong?
I tend to agree with you. And again, not because of anything against, you know, women being in the game or anything. I just think that at this moment in time, the difference between the men and the women's game is massive. And so to say that she'd be qualified to do the job, I think is a little bit outrageous. And that's where my kind of issue is with it. Not that she's a woman or anything like that, just the fact that the two games, in my opinion, are a million miles apart at the moment. And so there are more suitable candidates. So I do agree it's stupid, but that's the angle I'm coming from.
Connor?
I don't know. I get what you mean. And ultimately, I think if she's the best candidate, then you kind of deserve the job. But it's hard one, isn't it? You don't want to come across as just thinking, oh, she's a woman, she shouldn't get a job. But as Harry and you have said, it's a very different game. I think she needs to take that step into perhaps reserve football first. Get used to it. But then, I have to say, as a coach, if you can coach well, you can coach well, can't you? She's not out on the pitch tackling, heading the ball or anything, is she? So there's better options out there. And I'll leave it at that.
Kojo?
it's a bit of a sticky one. It's like like Connor said, I mean, if you know how to coach and you can coach well, you're tactically aware and you have ideas, you have your philosophy, then by all means, if you can go for the job and you can do a good job, absolutely go for it. But I hope this whole, the women in football is great because as a coach, I would want more women in football anyway, but I hope this shouldn't be forced. It can't be one of those, oh, let's put it in because we're trying to get women in football, so let's give her the idea, maybe she can be the benchmark. No, you have to make sure she's the right person for the role. You interview her properly. You put her on the line with everybody else. You see her accolades in the women's side of the game. You see what she's achieved. If you think it's good enough to bring it to the men's side, then yeah, but it's not something to be forced. If you force it, it's very, very, it's not done correctly. And then if she fails, it gives people a chance to say, oh, well, this is why you don't bring women in football. So, they shouldn't really force it. But Chelsea can attract a lot of managers. So I would be very, very, very shocked if they ever went to Emma Hayes.
Phil, what do you make of that?
Probably just to echo what the guys have said, but well, I'm probably a bit more traditionalist on this one. I just think that, you know, if you think about Chelsea as a club and, you know, the high level sort of rank managers that they've had in the past who have not really gained the respect of the players, and, you know, some of the big players and the egos that players have nowadays playing in the Premier League, you know, and I think one of the guys touched on earlier that the there's a massive gulf between the women's game and the men's game. I just, unfortunately, just don't see it, and I don't ever think we'll see that. I might be I might rue the words somewhere down the line that I've just said, but I just can't ever see probably a woman running one of the top six clubs in the Premier League. Nothing against women and nothing against women in football. It's just, I think, you know, it's there's certain levels, isn't there, right the way through the game, and I just it made me chuckle when I seen it. So it's not for me. Certainly not.
Mm-hmm. Rod, you agree?
Oh, yes and no, really. This is a weird one for me because, you know, if the woman, like Koji Stanley, if she interviewed well and she was tactically sound, and why not? You know, if you're saying about playing at levels, you know, look at the levels that Jose Mourinho played as a footballer. It was Tim Pot. Look at Arsene Wenger. It was Tim Pot. These are top class coaches. So just because it's a woman, you're saying, oh, no, she can't do it because she never played it. They just find that a bit. But like, football's a different. It's different. It'd be very, very difficult for a top team to give a woman. It'd be very brave. But, you know, if she did interview well and she did have the right staff around her, I'm sure, you know, why can Phil Neville go to the women's game? Because the women's game is totally different from the men's game. But yet Phil Neville's doing a good job there because he's a good coach and he knows what he's talking about. So, yeah, it's a difficult one, but you'd be a very brave person to do it. But it will happen eventually. 20 years, 30 years, 10 years, I don't know. But, yeah, I just have to think if she interviews well and she's tactically sound, like I say, why not? I don't see the reason,
I'm laughing at this. Leon Knight, as you guys know, he's very vocal about women in the game, but he put out a tweet yesterday and he said, when the lads are getting changed, cocks out and all that, well, will the gaffer be in the back because she don't want to be caught willy watching. Now, it's a bit of a male chauvinistic comment, as some people would say. I you know what Leon's like, he doesn't give a shit, and fair fucks to the guy for being very open about stuff like that. But at the same time, when you think about it, apart from, say, being a nurse or a care worker, when is it okay for a female to be seeing men naked in the workplace? Because
Stel, let me start you there. Every football team, or mostly every football team that I've played with, non-league, have had a women physio. And these women physio do their job while people walking around naked. They're not willy watching. That's just small-minded people having a little joke.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you shut that one down. Brilliant.
No, it's just the facts. I've played in many teams, and most of the there's the physios are women. So I've probably had one or two that willy watch, but yeah, it's natural for a woman to be there. Why would she be hanging about in the change room? Give her a team talk, or most teams now do the team talk in the hotel, and then they just come in 10 minutes before the game and have a little chat, and then they're out. They don't hang about in change rooms anymore. These are, you know, stadiums with offices and places for them to go.
Okay, cool. Great stuff. Right. Let's talk about another team that, well, hopefully will get relegated next season. That's Brighton, who today announced Graham Potter as their new manager. Connor, pardon the pun, but will Potter work his magic at the Seagulls?
We'll wait and see, won't we? It's a difficult one because he did well at Ostersunds. Everyone knows this story, especially Harry knows how he came to prominence, I'm sure. But it's hard to gauge the job he did at Swansea because they were a sinking ship and he's kind of steadied it. But he hasn't pulled up any trees, has he? So I was listening to TalkSport on the way home this evening, and they were saying it's great that an English manager has got the job actually been taken on, because normally English managers have to get promoted to get into the Premier League. But at the same time, it's one of those that, is it future-proofing? It seems a bit like future-proofing, doesn't it? For that inevitable / hopeful relegation next season. I mean, Hughton had to go, ultimately. Maybe they'll get a new manager bounce at the beginning of the season and keep themselves up. Maybe there's going to be three worse teams than them next season. But I don't know, it's hard to call this early.
Well, what do you think attracted Brighton to him?
He's probably cheaper than most other managers.
Mm, fair enough.
And like I say, future proofing. I think he did pretty well with Swansea. He's kept them steady. They were never in any real like danger of going down. I hate to say it, but it's probably the fact he's British helps, because they've got quite a few British players in their squad, haven't they? I don't know. I ultimately football comes down to money, doesn't it? I think it's probably one of the big factors. It's probably a relatively cheap appointment.
Mm. Did anyone see that interview with what's his name? Oh, the striker. I forget his name now. Help me here. The Brighton striker. Was
Glenn
it?
Murray.
Glenn Murray. That's it. On BeIN Sports, where they kind of announced it that Graham Potter was the manager, and the guy that was asking the question, he just didn't know how to ask the question. I think he wanted to say, you know, this manager wants to play football and you're just a brute up front. And, you know, Glenn Murray was like, yeah, he's a good manager. Well, what else could the guy say? He's not going to slate the guy, is he?
Glenn Murray's a striker who scored 13 goals two seasons in a row in the Premier League. So as long as he keeps doing that, I don't think he's got an issue.
Mm. Well, he's not Shane Long, so he'll be all right. He'll be all right.
No one's Shane Long. No one's that good.
Right, Mr. Harry, onto a manager who's, I'd say his career or his future is uncertain. It's Marcelo Bielsa. He's been linked with the Roma job. Now, you know a bit about Serie A. Given he was only at Lazio for a couple of days, do you see him going back to Italy?
It's not out of the question. There's going to be a few changes of managers in Italy come the summer, I think. Roma is a real possibility. They brought Claudio Ranieri in, of course, to try and steady the ship or try and give them a bit of a kickstart to get themselves back in the Champions League race, but it didn't really work out. So there is obviously a possibility there. Lazio as well, you know, I'm not sure if Inzaghi's going to stick around. They've kind of, having missed out on the Champions League last season, they've completely faded away this season. They're in eighth at the moment. So, you know, and Bielsa's got a really good reputation. And I don't know if it's just me, but I always think that Bielsa's reputation is like, really overblown and over, like he's overrated. When you look at what he's achieved in the game, it's not a great deal, and I'm not sure why he has the reputation that he does. And I'm not saying that he's a bad manager or anything. I'm obviously missing something, or I'm not, you know, as clued up on him as I should be. But I never understand why he's always linked with so many big jobs. And you know, Italy's a real possibility. Like I said, Roma are going to appoint someone else. There's no way Ranieri's going to carry on. Lazio is another option. I don't know if Inzaghi will still be there. We know that Inter are changing manager, and it's, I think, almost nailed on it's going to be Conte. The only thing we haven't had is an official announcement. So, yeah, we'll have to see, but it's definitely a possibility for him.
Mm. Just seems that Bielsa's a word-of-mouth manager in the sense that, you know, his CV in terms of achievements, trophy-wise, isn't great, but he's got a lot of clubs under his belt and loads of, I don't know, well-known footballers and coaches really, really rate him for his philosophy. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing really tangible there, is there?
Exactly. And that's kind of the point. Like, when you look at the teams he's managed, though, you know, at international level, he's managed Argentina, he's managed Chile. Club-wise, though, it's like Athletic Bilbao, Marseille, Lazio, like you said, just for a short period, Lille, Leeds. They're not quite the giants of European football, if you know what I mean. Athletic Bilbao, decent side, but not one of the big dogs in Spain. Marseille, you could say, are a big dog in France, or were a big dog in France, but that was only for a year. Lille, Lazio haven't really been anywhere near the top in quite a while as well. So I don't know. I don't know what it is about him. I don't know why people look at him and say, yeah, he's the right man all the time. And like I said, there might be something I'm missing, but I just don't see it.
Mm, yeah, I agree with you on that one, to be fair. He seems like a very good manager, but as I said before, he hasn't won anything. Well, not anything worth talking about, is it? So, anyway, let's move on. Speaking of football on the continent, let's do a quick Euro roundup. And Connor, Bayern Munich, they absolutely hammered Frankfurt 5-1 on the final day to retain the Bundesliga title again. Did you expect anything else?
From that final day, no. If you ask us before the winter break, I think would be excused if you thought Dortmund were going to win the title, but they have more than enough chances over the course of the season and bottled it ultimately, as much as I hate that word. We go to that final day. Bayern Munich played a Frankfurt side who were just exhausted, and they have been for weeks. Put too much into that Europa League campaign, which they ultimately fell against Chelsea. And it looks like, though, with no Champions League football next season, the rumour is Jovic is gone. And you can see others like Sebastian Haller and even Kostic going as well. So, you know, Bayern Munich will go on. And Dortmund need to do a lot to catch up, I think.
That's right. And Phil, Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery got on the score sheet in their final appearance for the club. Which of the two do you think will have the better career overall?
It's a tough one, really. I mean, if the sort of thing I'd sort of asked myself is which one would have probably preferred to sort of play City, and I'd probably pump for Arjen Robben. I think just based on the fact that, you know, where he played as a winger, sort of false 10 as well sometimes in behind the forward. So, you know, if you look at his record sort of internationally and at club level, he seems to have scored more goals than Ribery did. I know it's a different type of players, but I think if I cast my mind back at when the Bayern Munich were in sort of Champions League finals, you know, Robben was coming up with big goals, you know, at every club he's played at. You know, he's at Chelsea and Real Madrid, and then obviously at Bayern Munich. So he always seems to come up with goals, doesn't he, when needed to.
True, very true. Kojo, what happens to Dortmund now? I mean, they've announced the signing of Thorgan Hazard and have apparently snapped up Julian Brandt. Now, I'm not entirely sure how this will strengthen the squad, given they'll probably sell a few players in the summer.
So you know exactly how it is to drop down Borussia Dortmund, man. Me, you have the same thoughts about this team. They're going to do this thing where they get the footballers that the people, the Twitter people love, and then, you know, go for a run again and then do absolutely nothing with it afterwards. That happened, same thing happened with Paco Alcácer. It happened when they got Hakimi on loan for the 2 years. It's not that they're a bad side, but I just don't think they have the sort of that, the know-how of how to continue winning in a title race. Where you saw the results that they decided to get towards the end of the season. They'll be leading and then they throw it away, which shows a poor mentality, sort of like a butler mentality. So Julian Brandt's had a great season with Leverkusen, refreshed as a centre midfielder, so he might add a bit more. To be honest, I don't really rate Thorgan Hazard like that. So, you know, when we call people little Eden Hazard, that's pretty much what it is. You're the weaker brother, so, you know, you're not really the guy. I don't think they're going to do anything with him next season. I think it's going to be the same old with Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich had a poor start, and Dortmund had every chance to go and run clear, and every time they threw away leads, so they got what they deserve, and I think it'll be the same next year.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Harry, the race for the two final Champions League spots in Serie A are more interesting than the Prem's, to be fair, and Atalanta's fate is in their own hands after drawing at Juve. Now, as you know, Atalanta only have to match or better Milan's result at Spal to qualify. Fourth place Inter were hammered at Napoli, but face relegation candidates Empoli. How do you think this one will pan out?
I think Atalanta are going to do it. I think they've been so good this season that they deserve it. And I think at times this season, people have questioned their nerve, whether they'll be able to hold on and stay in the race. And they have, and they've leapfrogged Inter up into third. And I hope that they do it. And I think they will. In terms of Inter, though, I think, you know, they've got Milan hot on their trails, and they have got the toughest fixture because Empoli are the only side that any of those three are playing that have something to play for. So I think Inter are going to struggle with that one. To be honest, and we've seen Inter stutter through games this season, and they've not been very convincing any time that I've seen them play. So I think Atalanta will do it, and I think that we could see Milan sneaking in there as well.
What do you make of Gattuso's tenure at Milan so far? Because I remember the first few weeks of his time there, people were really talking about him getting sacked, and for him to get them in contention for Champions League, I think it's a pretty impressive feat.
I think with Gattuso, I think it's a hard one because I think he's the kind of manager that people want to like, in the sense that he's a motivator. You know, everybody knows what he was like as a player, and they that work ethic and, you know, tenacity, it does feed through into his team. And I think that's what he's given Milan. He's given him a bit of steel. But we've also seen lots of games this season where he's been undone tactically by his counterparts. And those people who don't watch Serie A, you know, probably sit there and say it's boring, it's this and it's that. But one thing it is it's very tactical. And I think the fact that he's not as sophisticated tactically means he can only go so far as Milan's manager. And I believe that even if he does achieve a Champions League position, that he won't be there next season. I do think that Milan have got their eyes elsewhere. And if they want to really build and push on, they need to get someone a little bit more astute, in my opinion.
But the thing is, if he does get Champions League and they do get rid of him, who can you see coming in? I know Spalletti could be on his way out. I don't think he'll make that move. Allegri's out of contract, or should I say he's leaving Juve, but I doubt he'll go back to Milan. So who do you think is out there? I mean, there's a certain French manager that's at Arsenal that has got strong links with Milan, with Gazidis. Is he in contention?
I don't think so, because if you think about all the stuff that's happened at Arsenal over the last couple of years, it's been quite evident that Gazidis was a huge part in Arsene Wenger walking away or leave, or being pushed, depending on how you want to look at it. So I don't think that he'll be keen to sort of get Arsene Wenger in there. But I think it's tough with managers, because it only takes one or two sackings elsewhere and then you sort of start this merry-go-round, don't you, where one manager moves on and it opens a vacancy for someone else. And it's very difficult to give you a specific name. But I think, you know, I was really surprised today to hear that Di Francesco is going back to Sevilla, or is going to Sevilla to link up with Monchi again. Because that partnership didn't work at Roma, and that's why Roma are in the mess that they're in now. So, you know, it's really tough to name you a specific name still, if I'm being honest. But like I said, there's a long summer ahead of us. We're going to see some chopping and changing in Italy. And I'd be interested maybe to see how Simone Inzaghi would do at a slightly bigger club with, you know, with more resource, because I feel as though he's taken Lazio as far as he can and they're kind of now on the decline a little bit just because things have gone a little bit stale. I do think he's a good manager though, and I think given the chance at a bigger club, he might do okay.
Mm. Well, look, if the Milan job becomes available, Emma Hayes might want to throw a hat in the ring. That might be.
There's good. Always that as well.
Although I don't know if Berlusconi will have something to do with it, but you know his track record, but let's not go into that. I know. Right, one final thing. Rod, Zidane's vendetta against Gareth Bale continues, as you know, and Bale wasn't even on the bench at the weekend, so I think it's safe to say that his Real Madrid career is over. Can you put your finger on what's going on? I mean, Bale doesn't seem like a bad egg, so what has Zidane got against him?
Yeah, it seems to be one of them players that, even though he's done so much for the club, you know, the fans are booing him, they're booing him driving away from the stadium. And Zidane just, the only thing that I can think about is his injuries. He's one of the modern day players that, you know, if he gets a little niggle, that then he doesn't play. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. But, you know, for someone who would be on a lot of money, who's come for a big fee, and he's still got 3 years left of his contract, won them Champions Leagues with unbelievable goals, and yet he still gets treated like the way he's been treated, is, you know, it's a bit. It's a bit tasteless, really, from a great club. So, yeah, they obviously want him out. He obviously, by reports, he's digging his heels in, and he's going to sit out for the 3 years. I can't see that happening, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Why would you sit at a club and not play football when you're probably one of the top 10 players in the world? It just doesn't make sense. So, I'm sure it'll be resolved in the summer, and I'm sure it'll be Premiership bound to where, who knows? So, it's going to be a big fit. And like I say, he's very, very injury prone. Even though he's a top-notch quality player, you know, for Wales, but he does miss a lot of games. He does miss a lot of games for Wales. So it'd be a big fee, but like I say, when he is on the pitch, he's a fantastic talent.
Mm. Well, I know you said that you're not sure where he will go if it comes to the Premier League. Gents, does anyone have a clue as to where he could end up? I mean, Rod said that the guy is injury prone and he's going to come with a big fee, so obviously United is the team he'll probably end up going to. Phil, where do you see Gareth Bale ending up?
It's a difficult one, really, because Chelsea have got the transfer ban, haven't they? You know, I'm certainly there, they've been in for him. I don't think he fits this sort of mould of what Pochettino looks for in Tottenham. So, you know, is that one out? I mean, ultimately, you probably I mean, United are probably where I'd see him go. Ended up going. I mean, it's been reported in the past that he was. Whether he was a United supporter or it was, he was always being courted that that would be his preferred destination if he was to come back to England. So I wouldn't be surprised if I didn't see him rolling up at Old Trafford, to be honest. But you know, he's got a big contract at Real Madrid, and I know he's on a lot of money, so he's got a lot to consider, hasn't he? Really, whether he's prepared to come and take a drop, or whether they sort of take Real Madrid take responsibility for some of his wages, I don't know. But I'd say United if I was going to pardon a pun on it.
Mm. Harry,
it could be a possible swap with Martial.
Not a
bad shout. So
yeah, I agree. Not a bad one. Yeah, Harry, can you see him possibly going to Juve to team up with Aaron Ramsey and Ronaldo? Obviously,
it'd be interesting to see first of all who comes in as the new Juve manager, and then you'll kind of get an idea of sort of their style and whether Bale fits. I don't know if Juventus can afford to have another mega money superstar on their wages, though. Having got Ronaldo, of course, and having Ramsey now on this incredibly overblown contract, in my opinion. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. But I don't know. I think Gareth Bale's future lies in the Premier League, if I'm honest. And I think someone is going to snap him up, and probably going to be Manchester United.
Okay, Connor, what do you reckon?
I don't think there's a place for him in the Premier League, if I'm honest. Wow. I really don't. I think he came out with the interview straight after the game, didn't he, and said, I'm getting paid €17 million a year. So that's how much they're going to have to pay to keep me. And hopefully he gets to improve his golf swing next season. So I think that was a little swipe at Thibaut Courtois when they came out and said that he cares more about golf than football. So I know Rod said about him being disrespected and stuff, but I think no smoke without fire, is there? He's probably not being an angel himself.
Okay. Kojo, what do you think?
I think he might go back to Tottenham on loan. I think it'll be a loan deal this summer, because I don't think anyone's going to be willing to pay. I think a Madrid will want around maybe, 80 million? 80 to 100, anywhere in between there for Bale. And I don't think anyone's going to pay that, because it's a risk to take someone that's had quite a lot of injury issues. Obviously, he's still a top quality footballer, but do you pay a lot to have someone that might miss 15 to 20 games of a season? It's not worth it. So I think it might be a loan deal, especially with the wages as well. By the way, that Martial Bale swap, please no. That can't happen. I've got a whole list of names he can take, but he's not one of them.
But why? Why not?
Because Martial hasn't been great the last 2 years, but I wouldn't want to swap. I don't. I'm scared of another Alexis Sanchez. I'm very scared of it. I don't want someone to come in on huge wages and be an absolute bomb for the club. I don't want another situation like that. I'd rather just either cash in on Martial. If he's going to get sold, just cash in on him, get some money from him, look somewhere else. Because it's very risky to get Bale. Obviously, he can come in and be a success, and then it could shut me up, but I don't think it's a deal that would make any sense. I mean, Sanchez and Mkhitaryan didn't make sense, but both our clubs did it anyway. So, you know, it is Man United, it is Edward Woods. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah, it would be, though, you know, get rid of Martial, who probably plays 35, 40 games, to bring Bale. And Bale's the pumper deal. You bring the players in like that when you're to the icing on the cake. You don't bring players like that when you're building the team. They're just at the end of the building, not at the start.
Yeah, but the thing is, don't forget, United signed Alexis Sanchez, and he's roughly the same age, isn't he? He was a bit older.
Yeah, but it's a bit different with him, because he wasn't so injury prone. He played a lot of games for Arsenal, and he was scoring goals in the Premier League. He's come to United, and it was just a Fernando Torres deal. He's just crap, just rubbish. just doesn't look like he wants to be there.
Well, there you go. I've got nothing more to say about Alexis Sanchez. I've said what I have to say about it. I've exhausted every possible What's the opposite of a superlative? Whatever it is, I've done that. So I can't say anything else about Alexis Sanchez. I'm fed up with the guy.
I'd take Gareth Bale now over Alexis Sanchez every day of the week now, though.
No, I agree. 100%. 100%. And you know that he's going to give it his all, so yeah. Anyway, right, gents, that's it for our show. Before I let you guys go, Twitter handles. Harry, go on, you go first. You've got quite a few.
just a couple. At Harry Simeou, my surname's S-Y-M-E-O-U, because nobody non-Greek can ever spell it. And the other one is at Chronicles _ AFC. That's the Arsenal podcast.
Great stuff. Connor?
At Radio Football, that's Radio F-T-B-L. And then that's it for now, I think, because I've had so much problems with my laptop.
Fair enough. Any plans for the summer, or are you just going to keep it quiet?
Got the Hero series, which I've got to start recording this week because I'm running out of time. And then, yeah, lots and lots in the new season, which will be, everyone will know in due course.
Great stuff. Kojo?
Yeah, my podcast is at Free in Midfield. Yeah, my personal one is Coach Kojo, K-O-J-O for Kojo. So, yeah, follow us. We've got some fantastic pods where we review each team in detail. So this should be fun.
You recording it tomorrow night?
Not tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm doing 40 Says.
Okay.
So, yeah, I have 40 Says. 40 _ Says as well. So we're doing that one tomorrow. It's been a while since we did that. So we're doing one tomorrow. But, yeah, I'm going to holler some of you guys for some of the clubs. If I can holler the City fan for a City one, that would be great.
He has a name.
He has a name. Sorry, sir, what is your name? Sorry. It's Phil Kojo. Awesome. I'll holler you off soon. Cheers, bro. Cheers. But see, yeah, that's how that's what we'll be for. Yeah.
See what City success has done to Kojo? It's broken him in half.
Listen, I was asked who would you prefer to win out of the two, and it's like asking if you want chlamydia or gonorrhea. I can't answer that question. And now in my case, where City have won all the cups in England, and Liverpool could win the Champions League, and I could be looking at actually on next season. I don't want to talk about football anymore.
I'll text you the number for Samaritans.
Please.
Excellent. Phil, that's his name. What's your Twitter handle, mate?
Sorry, mate, I've just lost you there.
What's your Twitter handle? Oh, Phil's gone. Beautiful.
We really lost him now.
Brilliant. Rod, what's yours?
Rod James Giggs.
Great stuff. We'll try and get Phil's one, and I'll at him when it comes to...
I think it's Phil 074.
Well, we'll find him. I'll include him in the releases. I don't even know what to say anymore. Give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. Again, thank you everyone for listening. Visit our Just Giving page because we're doing a fundraiser for the Sickle Cell Society. It's a Champions League sweepstakes, £10 entry. All proceeds go to the Sickle Cell Society. And that's it for this week. So until next time, I'm going to drop out and cut everyone off. Take care.